Welcome to Unstoppable, the conversation designed to fuel your success in real estate with insights from industry leaders and rising stars who embody the unstoppable mindset. Get inspired, take action, and accelerate your growth. Your hosts are joining you now. Today on Unstoppable, we are joined by Robbie LaFaro, one of Harcourt's youngest business owners and a real example of leading with purpose and ambition. We're talking about leadership, growth, and what it really takes to back yourself early. Robbie, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I was really, I only met you recently, and I, of course, then went and, you know, learned a bit more about you and discovered that you were Harcourt's youngest ever business owner ever.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You bought the business at, what was it, 23? Is that right?
25.
Oh, 25. So 25 years old, buying your first business. Mm-hmm. How did you get to that point at such a young age?
I started in real estate not long before that. And I was selling real estate, like I was really enjoying it. And I did pretty well in my first year of sales. And I put on an associate. I actually had three associates at one point. And what I realized is I just enjoyed teaching them and helping them grow. And I got more satisfaction out of them achieving things than I did out of me achieving things. So I kind of just thought, you know what, maybe I want to be a leader. I spoke to, you know, whoever there was to speak to at the time, and people sort of just talked me into it, and I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I bought into the business. I bought half of the business first, and then a few months later bought the other half of the business. So
when you bought the business, how many years ago was that now?
Four.
4 years ago you bought your first office, and you had 10 staff, I think you said?
Yeah, 10 staff.
And you have how many now?
150.
Wow, your recruitment bill must be through the roof.
Yeah,
that's
well,
astronomical growth.
Yeah, thanks. It's
please share your secret. That's what we want to know today.
We need to know everything now.
That's crazy. Congratulations. Yeah. That's phenomenal growth.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, it's been good. No, I don't know. I just, when I bought into the business, someone said to me that you're not in the business of real estate anymore. You're in the business of keeping real estate agents happy. And that, I don't know, there's like a light bulb just went off for me today. So at the time I was the top salesperson in the office. It was a very small office. But I don't know, it just clicked to me. I was like, well, what am I doing? Why be a business owner if I'm going to keep selling? There's no point. I'd actually make more money if I was just a sales agent. So either I need to get out of this business owner thing and just keep selling, or actually do this properly. So I just quit cold turkey with sales. I said, I'm going to sell the rest of my stock and I'm never going to take another listing again. So I did that. And then I just focused on recruiting and training and teaching and building the team. And that's kind of how it happened.
I think it's really interesting that the terminology that you used, I think that making a decision of saying, I'm going to be a listing and selling agent or a listing and selling principal, or a decision of I'm going to be a real estate leader and grow other people and be of service to them, I think it's an awesome move. It's bold, and it must have taken a hell of a lot of courage to actually pull the trigger and execute it, because I can imagine with the results you were achieving, you would have been probably in your comfort zone with things just coming to you. You didn't have to necessarily hustle as hard for the listings as you might have when you first started out. Yeah. How did you get into that? Was it easy to get into that mindset?
I wouldn't say it was easy. Like I had to take a risk in that. For me, I thought if I stop selling, I make less money, but I'm okay with that. The real risk is that if I stop selling and we can't pay the bills, then we can't pay the rent or I can't pay wages or whatever. That was the real concern. But I thought I've just got to back myself and do it. So one of my sales associates, she kind of just took over my stock, I guess. And I just said, from now on, any leads I get, they're yours. You take them. She was only 6 months in at the time, but she just ran with it. Now she's one of our top agents. She'll write probably 2.5 mil this year.
Wow.
She's doing really well. That was kind of the risk at the time. But like now my philosophy is that I don't run a real estate business. I run a facility for real estate agents. And my job is, I don't pay my agents a split. They pay me. That's how I look at it. And I have to earn my split by providing value. So my goal here, my focus is to provide the best agent experience that anyone could possibly have in the industry, because then people will want to work here instead of working somewhere else. And that's how we're able to recruit agents from other agencies or train them up from scratch and make sure that they want to stay and that they want to come and join. So
lots of questions are going through my head while you were speaking. Yep. The first one is I want to talk about the experience, so we'll hold off for a second before we get there. I want to know, was there a hurdle to overcome purely on your age? Let's be clear. You're a very fine-looking young man, but at the end of the day, probably someone will look at you and not know that you've got 150 people that you need to pay once a month.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's phenomenal. I want to know, was there a barrier of being able to overcome that, you know, I'm a business owner and I want people to treat me seriously? Or had you earned that respect before you got there? And it was hard. Like, it, you know, it was a barrier.
I have somebody now that I'm training up to replace me in one of my, in my main office, so that I can focus on growth and expansion. And one thing I always told him was, if you have to tell people you're the leader, then you're not a very good leader. So if you want to be treated like a leader and treated with respect, then you just have to act like a leader and just be the leader. And you have to be confident, be decisive, make decisions, and do what you say you're going to do as well. And you have to be really, really consistent. So to overcome the age thing, I dressed as well as I possibly could. So, every day it had to be a full suit with a tie, the whole lot, because, when you're 50, you can get away with a polo top and chinos, but when you're 25, you can't. So I thought if I dress as well as I can, then that's one thing that I can do. I don't know. I just never really acknowledged the fact that I was younger than everyone. I just did. And to be honest, all of the team were young too. Like even now, I think the average age across the entire business is probably less. It's under 30, be 28, 29. So, I think you attract people like you. So I think I attracted other young people, you know.
What leadership lesson did you learn very quickly?
That you can't want it more than they do for them. There are so many people that are still in the business that have so much potential that could be better than me and could do incredible things, but they just don't. And learning that maybe just isn't what they want. They don't want to be a millionaire. They just want to live a comfortable life and, you know, have a good work-life balance and all those things. So learning that was a big thing for me. And also learning to let people go really quickly. So, that was a big one.
That's a really hard lesson to learn, right? Because I think that with life experience, I think your tolerance for bad behavior gets shorter. I think the younger you are, the more you want to believe the best in people, because you're learning about all of that, right, as time goes on in every area of life.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that leaders, when they first really get going in leadership with the hiring and the firing, and you know that saying, hire slow, fire fast, I actually don't subscribe to that at all. I think hire thoroughly. Do a thorough hiring process that can still be quick if you are thorough. But yes, do make quick decisions on letting people go. But letting people go is it's a tough thing to do. Nobody enjoys it. And if you do enjoy it, it's probably a whole different conversation on your psychopathic tendencies. Yeah. But, it's difficult. Conversations aren't easy, right? But the older you get, the easier they get, because I think you get a bit more comfortable in being uncomfortable with those conversations. How did you get yourself to be strong enough quickly, which you clearly are, to have those difficult conversations with people?
I look at it differently because I think no one enjoys firing people. Like, that's a terrible thing to have to do. But once you do it, it's like a weight off your shoulders. It's like, this person is out of my life now. And what I learned as well is good people get fired, but good workers never do. And if you're a good worker, then you really, like, you're just not going to get fired. Not in my business anyway. So it's, if somebody was getting fired, quite often they knew it was coming, or they were doing the wrong thing and they got caught or whatever. And so what I've come to learn is the part of the reason I think a lot of business owners keep people on for so long is because they don't want to admit they made the wrong decision in the first place. And it becomes a pride thing. And like, some people do change. Like, some people are really, really good, and then for some reason they stop being a good employee or a good worker or whatever. But I find a lot of people think, like, they think they've hired a superstar, and they get so invested in, they tell everyone how great this person is, and then it turns into a flop, and they don't want to face that. So they just keep putting more and more energy and money into this person to keep trying to get them to turn good. What I've realized is I need to let my ego go and just say, I screwed up on this one. I need to cut my losses and move on. So.
You seem incredibly self-aware, and I think that for human beings generally, self-awareness is not something that comes easily or naturally to a lot of people. Is that something that you've worked on, or just something you're naturally, it's just your natural state?
I reflect a lot. So, I always just sit down and just think about situations, or like, what I could have done differently, or whatever. I don't know. I try to reflect as much as I can, and it kind of helps me realize, actually, that was me. I was being an asshole, or I was wrong in that situation, or it could be, no, I was absolutely right, and that person screwed me over, or whatever. So, yeah, you just got to think about it and really think with an open mind, you know?
Robbie, do you have a team that could you just talk to us about the different layers and tiers? So you obviously have a management team that reports to you, and they run the set. How does it work?
The current structure.
The current.
I've got a business partner in each office, who is, and each business partner in each office is a sales agent writing over $1 million. I won't really do it with somebody who's not at that kind of level. That person runs their office and is there to be available for the team and make sure they're getting everything they need. My Stafford office is my main office, our biggest one, and that here, though, it's a little bit different because there's no selling principal. In this office, there's Zach, who's now at the point where he's pretty much running the place. I check in on him, and I go, "Oh, you don't need me anymore? Oh, okay." So it's kind of like that. Below him, there's a sales manager who's based at Stafford, but he goes to all the offices and just, I don't know, trains and teaches and whatnot. We've got a really big admin team, and there's a leader in that part of the business. Well, it's its own business now, but our admin business has a manager, I guess. We've got a tech division. So Blair, he's in charge of all the tech side of the business, and all the new software that we're building and whatnot. So he runs all of that. I've got a media team. So there's a big, like, we're trying to be really big on social media and that sort of thing. So we're creating a lot of content. So the media team, I think, has six people in it now, and that's got a leader. What else do we have? I think that's kind of it. Like, that's the management team. Oh, and property management.
You've got an incredible space up there too. I was lucky enough to visit your offices unexpectedly as a tag along for one of your guest speakers that you had, and your training room and auction space looks amazing. And I mean, you've got as well. I noticed when I walked into the office, the sales guys were in there playing ping pong. You've got this great kind of breakout area for people to kind of just take a minute and let off some steam before they get back to work.
So the office at Stafford is really big. So it's about 1,400 square meters. And
Wow.
yeah, so we've got like, and it's all open plan. So the office, the way it's set up is that everyone kind of works together, they mingle, they talk to each other. And the energy is really, really good because it gets loud sometimes, like, which I think
Yeah.
is a good thing. And there's places they can go off if they want to be quiet, but we try to discourage that because I think you're better off just being amongst it, in my opinion. Then there's a bunch of boardrooms. There's a big space out the back where they can hang out. There's couches and games and all that sort of thing. And then we've got the auditorium next door, which has about 250 seats. It's got like a stage and all the, I don't know, the lights and the smoke
And
machines.
you run careers nights in there as well, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you find running careers nights?
Probably one of the best things we ever started doing. So now we have the average turnout's probably about 150 people.
Wow. How
Yeah, so,
often?
once every 6 weeks.
So frequent.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So every careers night we try to hire sort of between 5 and 10 people. And they come on board. Not everyone makes it, obviously, because our expectations are really high. Some people come in and they just realize real estate's not for them, or they come in and they're just not performing, so we have to let them go. But yeah, we do them quite regularly. And it's for all of the offices. Like they come to Stafford and we hire them here and then train them up and then ship them off to wherever they're actually going to be based. So yeah, the careers nights are really good, and it's a great way for us to, I don't know, get, I think we get the best applicants in the industry because of the way we run the events.
I
So
tend to agree. I think careers nights are really interesting. Anyone can sit on Seek and submit an application that's already preset and saved to their profile. But careers nights, people are actually having to make the physical time, get themselves presented, in a way that's suited to the industry, come in and actually have a conversation with somebody before even really knowing anything more about it. So I think careers nights are fabulous
And they're
and
on your turf, it definitely shifts the power. Now let's go back to what you said in the very beginning, which was that experience that you've created. Talk to us about what that looks like once your staff decide to join your team.
Okay, so the agents here are clients. They're not employees. They're not, I mean, technically they're employees, but we treat them as though they're clients. They come on board and everything is set up to make their lives easier. So like even to the point where like our support team, so we've got a big support team, and I'll say to them, this is like, treat these people like they're a guest in a hotel. If I went and stayed in a hotel and I didn't make my bed in the morning, housekeeping don't call me and say, what the hell, come and make your bed. They just make it for me. So that's what we expect. And we say to the agents, we expect that you're respectful of everyone and respectful of the team. But outside of that, that's it. That's all you do. You just list and sell property. So if they leave a coffee cup on their desk, somebody's going to clean it up for them. If they, I don't know, if they come in and their rubbish bin's full, like somebody will empty it for them. So they're expected to just be respectful of each other, don't break the law, obviously, and list and sell property. We do all of their admin for them. So we've got a whole admin business, which is separate, but that provides all of their, I don't know, admin, like whatever they need. All their marketing is done for them. Their video content and media content is all made for them. What else do we do? We have training, is daily training in all of the offices. So anyone who works anywhere can
Is
access
that
that.
compulsory?
For associates, yes. For agents, no. So agents choose to go. We get guest speakers in once a week. I don't know, what else do we do?
All they need to do is list and sell.
Yeah, that's the idea. And then there's the associate program, which is a big selling point for a lot of agents. Usually one's writing like 400 plus, but yeah.
Because they get leads, and leads are currency, right?
Like we don't talk about leads. I never talk about leads to the agents or like promote that we'll give you leads or anything like that. It's just not a thing in our business. I say you find your own opportunities. in saying that, the associate program is a massive lead generator, but we don't, like, I don't want to make them think that they come here for leads, because I think that breeds laziness. But there is lots of lead. Like, one of our biggest issues is that we're booking so many appraisals that aren't actually getting done because we don't have enough agents to do the appraisals that we book.
That's a good problem to have. Wow.
Well, you think so, but then we get a lot of complaints. And the problem is, like, other Harcourt's offices that are close to us will get complaints as well, saying, hey, you were supposed to come out, or someone from your office was supposed to come out. And they go, oh, no, that's not us. That's probably Robbie's office.
So for anybody listening in the Stafford area, make sure you give Robbie a call. There's plenty of MAs to go around to get yourself started.
Well, yeah, but I guess that's our issue, is that we've outgrown the area that we're in. So
yeah,
like, now, so we now, like, we sell more property in Brisbane than any other agency for any brand. And so because we're spread so far, we're selling or listing and selling in areas that aren't actually our area, if that makes sense. Like, there's other Harcourt's offices there.
Hence your growth plan.
That's right. Like, I don't know. To me, I just want to keep growing and we'll see what happens.
Has there been something that comes to mind, like what's been your toughest leadership decision that you've had to deal with, which has really made a difference?
I think so. I had maybe over a year ago, I had two agents that I had to let go. They were decent writers, but really bad for culture. So I let them go. And then they eventually started an agency themselves and just started doing the wrong thing. And I don't know, it was an eye-opener for me to see that sometimes people will break trust or do what they say they won't. And every possible thing they could have done that they weren't supposed to, they did. And like, I've been sued many times, but I've never been the one suing somebody. And I was at the stage where I was ready to basically, like, to file a lawsuit. And I thought, what does that say about me to the rest of my team, if I'm letting people that are doing the wrong thing take up so much of my time and my energy and my focus, for what? Like, just to get back at them, just to destroy their business because they did the wrong thing by me. Like, it's just not a good look as a leader, I thought. So, and a lot of people were telling me, no, you should do it and make an example. But I thought, no, I don't actually believe that. I think it's when I really thought and had to reflect, I thought, no, that's not the right thing. It's better to, like,
let them do it. What did they say? Silence sometimes speaks volumes.
Yeah. I admire and respect that so much, Robbie. I think that's an incredible way to have looked at things. And your word choice there was interesting. Yes, I could go and make an example of them. Or you could set an example for your team, and you've chose to set the example. So I think it's really admirable that you made a decision to let two performers go to protect the culture of your business. Yeah. And then when you were, you know, having them do the wrong thing, which I'm assuming is poaching staff and clients and that sort of stuff, you know, instead of going and putting your time, money, energy and efforts into, you know, a basically unproductive lawsuit, you've gone and said, no, I'm going to show the team how to rise above it and just keep pushing forward. And I'm sure now, 18 months later, 12 months later, they probably haven't even touched your growth.
No.
And no, your team is better for it. It's really admirable. I always love hearing about business leaders that live by the values that are written on their wall.
Absolutely. What's your vision for your business moving forward?
I think so. I've got another office opening in maybe 2 weeks. I've also
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I'm in the middle of buying another business that has three offices, so that'll come on board.
Are they aging principals or succession people that successing out and they're approaching you? Are people coming to you to buy their businesses?
No, not really. This is actually the first real estate business I've bought. So, this is all new for me. Like, I've never bought a rent roll, I've never done any of that. So, this is my first experience with it, but it's been really easy because they're a little bit older than me, but not that
Sure.
much. And I think for them, it just made sense. And we're a good cultural fit. And yeah, so they, I don't know, it just seemed like a logical next step. So that's kind of where, or for them anyway. So yeah, and it fits with my growth plans. So we will have 8 offices by the end of May. So,
Wow.
and then from there, just I don't know, more offices. We're already like we're number one in Brisbane, and that like with this acquisition, it'll make us number one by like a country mile. So I think the next place will probably be Sunshine Coast, then I guess Gold Coast after that, and then I don't know, maybe Sydney, who knows? So
Watch this space.
yeah,
Right? I think what, how, I just think it's incredible what you can do. What anyone can do, no matter how old they are, with a clear vision and a commitment to being a real estate leader. It just goes to show that if you make that commitment to yourself, the rest just, I mean, it doesn't just happen. Obviously, it's work, but it will just happen if you just make that commitment and work on that leadership. What do you, have you found recruitment challenging? I mean, obviously your careers nights with sales associates, you know, would definitely help, but what about experienced agents? Do you find recruitment challenging when you're first getting started?
At first I thought it would be hard, but it was actually really easy. All I did, I just made a list of every agent I could find on realestate.com and just started calling them, and that was it. Like, it was like prospecting for a listing. It's so easy. And
You
most
make things sound so simple and easy and
it really
effortless.
is, and everyone just doesn't do it. And
It's
I've
true.
Yeah, and I've had so many business owners will say, come and teach me how to do recruiting, come and whatever. And I just say, literally just do this. I'll do it with you if you want. But they just don't pick up the phone and do it. And I've had
You
like,
work crazy hours, Robbie? Do you work long hours?
I used to, but I realized actually quite recently that I don't need to work as long hours, as long as I'm efficient in the hours that I'm working. And
That's gold.
yeah, and also like as the business grows, I can delegate more of my tasks. So like if I'm not trying to grow the business, then I really don't actually have anything to do. Because even now, like previously it would just be I'd be hanging around the office and people would just come to me with problems or questions, or I'd just be walking around going, what are you doing? What are you doing? But now with Zach doing that, and Kobe, our new sales manager, it's like they don't come to me as much anymore. So I kind of feel like a parent whose kids have grown up and left, and now I'm just kind of sitting around bored. So, yeah. So now it's just expanding into new areas or building different businesses. So, yeah.
Best piece of advice you've received.
That I've received. Those that help others succeed will be unusually successful. So, yeah.
Oh, I like that. I really like that. And you've surrounded yourself with some really high performing, big vision real estate leaders that. You know, you've I love what you've done with, you know, sort of going and getting as much as you can from the industry because the industry does give back. People are
Yeah.
always happy to have a chat, answer questions, give their time, you know, like you said, going and sitting with other business owners saying, hey, let's make the calls together to recruit people. People will do it, but and I don't know why, but not everybody reaches out to actually grab that opportunity, which is crazy to me because there's so many incredible people in this industry with so much knowledge. You know, I can't imagine. I mean, just getting someone to sit with you for an hour to go and hit a list of agents that they need to call, that's got to yield a result.
Occasionally I get real estate business owners reach out to me, but what surprises me, and I try not to say this with arrogance, but like I'm not hard to find, and I'm not, and I don't know, maybe people think I'm busy, but the fact that very few people who say they want to do what I'm doing don't reach out and ask for help or advice. Because when I was starting out, and even now, like, I reach out to everyone I possibly can and just try to pick their brains. And sometimes people are rude and don't want to help, and that's fine. But almost everyone I've reached out to has been willing to help me.
Mm.
And so I would do the same. And I say it every time I'm on a podcast or I'm, I don't know, doing a training session or a talk or something, I say, reach out, I'm happy to help. And no one really does, which, well, some people do, but it just helps me.
I find it interesting. Look, I don't think it's anything about the specific person that's offering their help. I remember I was at a Wingman event recently, the Prophet Summit, and Phil Harris spoke, and he spoke about his basically his blueprint for his business, and he had it all up there on slides. Yeah. And everybody stopped to, of course, quickly grab their phones out, photos of the slides, and he said, take all the photos you like. None of you are going back to the office to actually implement any of this.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it all comes down to the power of actually taking action and implementing what it is. So, you know, people want, I'm sure lots of people want the business that you've got. Are they willing to go and do what you've done to actually go and have it?
Maybe. And years and years and years of consistency, day in, day out. It's not an overnight success here, I'm sure.
What do you think is going to be the non-negotiables of you're leading the new generation? You said that, you know, the age range of your agents are between 25 and 30. Mm-hmm. What is your what do you think are kind of the non-negotiables for that next generation of leadership?
Say, do what you say you're going to do, because if you, like, I think all the good you can do can be undone really quickly if you screw somebody over, or if you lie to somebody or whatever. And like that, and that's happened to me. I think also being really consistent about your appearance, your message, like the things that you say, like whatever it is, however you want your team to be, you just have to keep drilling it into them over and over and over again. And you get sick of saying the same thing over and over, but you have to do it. I think also, identifying the kind of culture that you want and like actively trying to make that happen. Like in our business, we want a high performance culture. I don't want people to, I don't know what they do now, but like, we're not a party culture. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. We're not
snorting coke and drinking every weekend. I'm sure some of them do, but, but like, I say to the team, we all benefit from a good culture, so we're all responsible for that good culture. But in reality, like, it starts from the top, and you have to realize that. And I think realizing that as you become a leader and as you become better at being a leader and you lead more people, that what you say really matters and what you do really matters, and you're under a microscope more than you realize. And if I walk in and somebody says hi to me and I don't respond or I don't say hi back, like, that can literally ruin their day. Whereas when I was just an associate or an agent, if I did that, somebody would be like, oh, whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you're a role model.
Yeah. I think that people severely underestimate the impact of a leader, whether positive or negative.
Yeah.
On the individual employee or person involved in the business. Mm. So I'd love to, we'll wrap it up now, but I'd love to just ask you one last question, which is, what is your biggest leadership inspiration, whether inside or outside of real estate?
Like, who do you mean?
Who, what, anything. It's
your call.
I don't know. That's a tricky one. I do follow Dana White from UFC.
Yeah.
I follow him, and I like that, you know, when I see him in interviews. I don't really watch the UFC itself, but I follow him and I see him in a lot of interviews, and I like that he's really like firm and he's never changed his stance on things like how he pays the fighters and how he runs the events and where he decides to run an event and who he lets be a sponsor of his program. Mm-hmm. His values are really clear, and whether you agree or not, at least he says, this is what we do, this is my company, and this is how we're going to run it. And I don't know. I like that.
I like that clear, consistent messaging.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Robbie. I feel like I could talk to you all day about all of the things that you've done in your business, but we don't have that much time. So thank you for joining us. And I
Absolutely.
hope everybody tuning in has been able to learn something. And Robbie will, I'm sure, be happy to talk to anybody if you ever want to reach out and connect with him directly. Thanks so much for joining us.